Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand, 20 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday evening. It's a pleasure to say hello to Tom Dreesen. Tom, welcome to the Chicago Afternoon News.
Steve, what's going on in Chicago?
All right, well, you tell me. You know stories about everyone. Do you have any Van Halen stories?
No, he was a member of my country club at Lakeside.
Really?
You know, where I'm a member. So I would see him out there, but I don't have any, you know, any personal stories on, but we'd always say hello to, you know, one another and stuff like that. But I don't have any, but I'm awful sorry to hear about him dying.
Yeah, and I know it's been a long struggle. Hey, you know, we had news here you might not be aware of, but they announced today, or we're being reported, I think Variety broke it, that Second City is up for sale. You know, and I don't know that you did much improv coming up, but certainly a sad story. Improv Olympics closed altogether earlier this year. I mean, it's been rough on the comedy world.
Oh, amen. And Second City was my one regret, you know, that I never went to Second City, because when I went in show business, I had a wife and three kids. The day I went in show business, comedy partner, Tim Reed, you know, we were America's first black-white comedy team. He had a wife and two kids. So from day one, and there were no comedy clubs in those days, so from day one, we had to make a living. We were, you know, struggling to make a living in the business. But I've always regretted that I couldn't have gone to Second City. It's such a great training program for comedy.
Tell me about the years with Tim Reed, because that certainly interests me. You broke ground. You remain friends, correct?
Oh yeah, we're best of friends to this day. I, you know, we, you know, we paid dues like no one else ever had to pay. In those days, there was, you know, like I say, no comedy clubs. So we worked all black clubs in the North and the South, what they affectionately called the Chitlin Circuit, black-owned, black-operated nightclubs, and we worked all white nightclubs too. You know, we eventually went on the Playboy Circuit. But you know, the fourth time on stage, a guy put a lit cigarette out in Tim's face,
and
it beat the hell out of me. And he was a big guy, boxer, when I was in the service, but he outweighed me by 100 pounds. And, you know, but, you know, at University of Illinois, when I had a guy hit me in the face with an ice ball, went outside and took a snowball.
Because you were performing with a black man.
Well, I don't know. You know, I have to tell you, it's a strange thing. In those days, 95% of the people who saw us liked our material and liked our act. We went wherever there was racial tension, we went to perform. We did high schools, colleges. We didn't preach. We just tried to make people laugh. We did 13 prisons in 1 year. We did the county jail three times. Wherever there was racial tension, we'd go trying to make people laugh.
That's more than Jussie Smollett. That's more than Jussie Smollett does.
Yeah, that's for sure. But 95% of the people who saw us like this, there was always that one element, 5%. If there was a black guy who hated white people, hated them with a passion, he wasn't mad at me. He was mad at Tim for being with me. If there was a white guy who hated black people with a passion, you know, he wasn't mad at Tim. He was mad at me for being with Tim. You know, so that one element was out there. But for the most part, you know, people, you know, enjoyed what we did.
Tom Dreesen's on the phone line. He's got a new book out called Still Standing. Hey, Tom, I should tell you, my dad put in 30 years at the stamping plant in Chicago Heights. And so when we needed Cubs tickets, Lou Boudreau was our contact.
Oh, yeah. Harvey boy.
That's right. Keep it all in Harvey.
I talk about him in the book. The book is called Still Standing, the subtitle is My Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra.
Yeah, and so you talked about dirt poor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I had eight brothers and sisters. We lived in a shack. You know, there was, if a window broke, you stuck a rag in it. If you had holes in your shoes, you put a cardboard in it, you know. But I shined shoes in all the taverns in Harvey. I set pins in bowling alleys. I caddied. I sold newspapers. All of this to help feed my brothers and sisters, and none of this do I regret, you know, but the book is basically about this 8-year-old boy, myself, shining shoes in these bars, and Frank Sinatra's on every jukebox in the bars, and that's the first time I heard him, and then the book takes you from the little boy in Harvey, Illinois, hearing Frank Sinatra on the jukebox, to one day that same little boy is carrying Frank Sinatra's coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California.
Yeah.
So it's the journey and all the things in between. And there's a great story in there about Lou Boudreau when I was a little boy, when they had a Lou Boudreau Day in Harvey. You know, and I talk about him. That a lot of people do not know that what a great athlete this guy was. Aside from the fact that he, at Thornton High School, he took the team downstate 3 years in a row to the final game, and they won the state championship one of those years, and runner-up 2 years. He then went on to University of Illinois, where he was captain of the basketball team, and then was baseball drafted by the Cleveland Indians. At age 24, he played shortstop and managed the team to a pennant and the World Series. And he hit 368 that year and only struck out eight times. And he was the one who came up with the Ted Williams shift. And he was a brilliant baseball mind, you know.
Yeah, and a very nice man. You know, you talk about Frank Sinatra and going with him from listening on the jukebox to his burial, but the most poignant moment for me was when you were in the car with him late in his life after one of his performances, and you were trying to cheer him up, said he had a great show. He said, "Tommy, they're coming to say goodbye to me." That must have been quite a moment.
Yeah, that was in Salt Lake City, Utah. He was 78 years old, and we were going from city to city. He drew 20,000 people, you know, everywhere he went in these big arenas. He actually drew 40,000 in Hawaii one night, you know, and everywhere we went, these big crowds. And one night, he got like six standing ovations, and they couldn't get enough of him. And they were throwing flower petals on him when we were leaving the arena, getting into the limo to go to the jet. And with this cheering and cheering, and then seconds later, we're in this quiet limousine rushing to the private jet. And he was real quiet, looking out the window. And I said, "Great crowd tonight." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Great crowd." He said, "You know, I think they're." They think they're seeing me for the last time. And he read the audience right, because that's what was happening in all these cities. You'd go to like Salt Lake City, Omaha, Lincoln, Nebraska. They knew you weren't coming back there ever again.
Right.
And I said, "Well, you know," I said, "we haven't been here in Salt Lake in a long time." He said, I know, Tom. And he looked out the window again and he said, "They're coming to say goodbye to me." And that was it. He read the audience right. That's what they were doing.
That's quite a memory. Hey, I want to play this Seinfeld clip from you. He was asked about COVID-19 and whether COVID-19 will ever become funny.
This will be funny. Comedians will figure out what we can say and can't say when we get back in front of audiences.
How's this going to work?
I don't think it's going to work for a while. I don't like compromised versions of things. I want the real thing, the authentic thing. I want the pure hit. I want the real drug. I want real New York pizza. So I'll wait.
That's it. What do you think of that, Tom? Do you think COVID will be funny one day? I don't know that we do 911 joke, 9/11 jokes yet, do we?
No, that's a different matter. Okay. I will make it funny if I can, because I had COVID.
Oh, you did?
And I was in the hospital. Yeah, and that was just recently. I've been out of the hospital 31 days now, and I had the COVID. It hit me out of nowhere, you know, and then I thought I could beat it. Stay at home. I talked to my doctor. You know, you check your oxygen. I got one of those oximeters at the drugstore.
Yeah.
And I took my temperature, and my highest temperature was 101. And so we were monitoring the temperature, taking Tylenol. And he said, after 10 days of COVID, will leave your body, my family physician, and then you'll recoup from. After 10 days, I wasn't feeling good. After 14 days, I called him. I said, "Doc, there's something wrong with me. I don't feel good at all."
Right.
They put me in Cedars-Sinai, and in 5 days, they put me on steroids and released me after 5 days. That was 31 days ago. Today, I'm back to full strength. I played golf 3 days in a row over the weekend. I'm working out with the weights. I'm working out. So
that's good to hear, because we were just talking earlier about some people, you know, that even when they're done and recovered, they're not fully recovered for a long time, but you're feeling 100%.
100%. But I got to tell you something else. I'm also, according to the doctors, COVID-free for the rest of my life. Now, some of your listeners will say, "Oh, that's not true. That's not true." Well, look it up. There's three people in the world that had a reoccurrence. One was in the Netherlands, one was in Belgium, and one is in Hong Kong. And not one of those three can they concur that it was an actual reoccurrence. So I'll still be careful. I'll still do all the things. But I can now talk about my personal experience with COVID and try to make it funny.
Were you ever scared?
I have to be honest with you, one day, I wasn't afraid. I had experienced something, you'll read in my book, which I know that you've already bought two of those books, one, and you're going to give some away.
I bought three. Are you kidding me? I got a big family.
So when you get to that last chapter, you'll see that I went through something 2 years ago that was even scarier than the COVID. But I survived it, and I survived the COVID. But there was one day in the hospital, if I'm going to be honest with you, Steve, I lay there, and I was feeling bad, and I thought, I don't want it to end this way. And I got up and I start walking to the door. I'm as you may or may not know, I'm a motivation speaker. I give motivation talks. I'm a stand-up comedian first, last, and always, but I love giving motivation talks. And I talk on four subjects: perception, visualization, self-talk, and develop a sense of humor. But I was laying there, and I got up, and I said, I can't I don't want it in this way. I start walking to the door, and I'm quarantined.
Right.
And walking to the bathroom 10 times a day, 25 steps back and forth, back and forth. And then that was a physical exercise. And then I went into the mirror in the bathroom, and I would say, day by day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. I had five mantras. Day by day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. I'd say that five times. I'd say, I feel happy, I feel healthy, I feel terrific. I'd say that five times. But I had five positive self-talks. So I felt like I was fighting back physical exercise as well as mental exercises. And I felt like I was fighting back. And about 3 days later, they released me from the hospital. But I think it was my mental attitude that helped as well. You know, you got to fight back, but you got to know how to fight back, you know.
Well, that's a great story to hear. I'm glad to hear that that you're feeling well. And I agree with you. The idea of attitude has so much to do with so many things.
No question about it. And that, again, there's a great book by Shad Helmsetter called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself.
Yeah.
And the most important person you'll ever talk to is yourself. You know, and so that's what I teach classes about. You know, I sometimes do, you know, silly things, but I'll take a glass of water and I'll pour dirt in it and I'll stir it and I'll tell somebody, please drink this, and no one will drink it. I said, you won't drink dirt. Why would you think dirt? Negative thoughts are dirt. Why would you put filth? I point to the mouth. I said, you won't put filth in this part of your body. Then I point to the brain. I say, why would you put filth in that part
of
your body?
I love that. Yeah. Still Standing, My Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. Tom Dreesen, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And I'm so happy to hear you're in good health.
I feel great, and you can go to Amazon.com, and that book will be at your door in 2 days. They're really fantastic.
I've already got four outside my door right now. They're all waiting for me.
Boy, you bought one while we were talking when you had three.
I'm so good. Huh? That's right. All right, thanks, Tom. Good to see you. You're listening
to
the See You Bet Chicago Afternoon News on 720 WGN.